Inspiration. 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 Innovation. 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 Japan. Japan. Japan.
Nick Luscombe.
Welcome along, Inspiration Innovation Japan. We're live at CIC Live here in Toranomon, the heart of innovation in Tokyo. And all around us, you can't see this, but out there, there's like a load of things going on, which are all very innovative and interesting. So that's what happens here. So it's great to be back, back live, that is. Today, I'm very happy to be joined by Georgi Ichikawa.
Hello.
Hello. Thanks for joining me today.
Thank you for having me.
So you're head of creative and design at Puma, which is one of the things we'll talk about a little bit. We'll also talk about your backgrounds and some of your ambitions as well, the things you're looking to do.
Yeah.
And it's quite cool because there's a mutual friend of ours, Akiko, who did a radio show here at CIC. And she kind of introduced us because, you know, you're keen to work in radio as one of the other many things you do. So so this is a little bit of a kind of introduction to that world,
it's
I guess.
It's quite exciting new start for me.
Excellent. That's great. That's great. So I guess, you know, what I always like to do with this program is to start off is to try and get a bit of background. So you were born in Tokyo, right?
Yes.
Okay.
I was born in actually Hiro. So yeah, Tokyo.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Tokyo born.
Yeah, right. Okay. And so you grew up here and you went to school here and everything, yeah?
Yeah, I went to school like normal public, no, what's it called? Not private, public school, yeah.
Right, okay, yeah.
Until like junior high, then I went to like a private school for a couple of years and then moved to England.
And so your parents are, what, English and Japanese?
Yeah, my dad's Japanese.
Right.
My mum's English, so it's like the reverse of the what you normally get with the mixed kids in Japan, but yeah.
Yeah. And how was it growing up and going to school?
I was the only one with a middle name. My middle name is Christopher. So it was quite funny to think about it looking back because all the schools, even though, you know, the different schools in the area, they seem to have known all my full name. So if I go to the station, like some of the bad boys would be like, oh, you must be Christopher Georgi Ichikawa. And I'm like, yeah, hello, that's me.
Nice.
Yeah.
So they just knew.
Somehow.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's interesting. I guess people in Japan don't tend to have middle names, right?
So not really. So, right. You know, even when you're doing the exams, I always have to put my hand up saying, sorry, sir, my name doesn't fit in.
It's a really good way to start, isn't it?
Yeah.
And so what did you study at school? What kind of things did you do before you left and moved to England?
Well, just normal.
Just
Japan,
normal subjects.
Like subjects, nothing specialized.
Okay.
Just doing. I always wanted to do creative stuff, but you know how Japan could be, you know, like creativity doesn't give you the job and all that kind of thing.
Yeah.
I always had interest in music. I always draw, but if I was in Japan, I guess I wouldn't have possibly gone into the creative world.
Yeah, sure. But then when you left Japan to go to London, did you kind of go into a creative area?
So yeah, I went to Lincolnshire to do my A-levels.
Okay.
Which is a crazy experience because, you know, coming from, I'm from the Kamakura area.
Oh yeah.
But moving over there to this little village called Louth.
Okay.
Which had no train station. They had like Thursday closing, which I didn't really understand what that
Thursday
was.
Thursday closing? What things closed on
like
Thursday?
All the stores will close on a Thursday afternoon. And I'm like, okay. What's going on here?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I couldn't speak English that much as well. So it was quite a culture shock.
Ah, okay. Yeah. So did you were learning English when you went there as part of the things that you were doing?
Yeah. So when I went there, like I was this quiet Japanese boy that doesn't speak anything. But it's just that I just couldn't communicate. So I used to hide myself in the library pretending to do things because I didn't know what to do, basically. But then slowly and surely, you know, I got to.
You did speak. It. Okay.
Yeah.
And then, so you studied A-levels and then you went to university. So what were the kind of things you were studying when you were doing A-levels?
A-levels, I started doing English, which I obviously couldn't pass. So I had to give that up. That was too much for me. But I picked up music and art.
Okay.
Yeah. And I did just took the Japanese as an exam. So I got 3 A-levels, but I only took like 2 lessons.
I see. Okay. Yeah, that makes
obviously
sense.
Obviously, I got A in Japanese, so I did
of
all
course.
Right.
And so it's art that led you to university?
Yes.
Right.
So, I always wanted to do art. There was like a big talk with my parents, like what I'm going to do and all that kind of thing. And I guess my dad's a professor, so he was a little bit more of an academic side, so he didn't really get it. But I applied for foundation course at the London College of Fashion, and I got like an open exception.
Okay.
So that was a good sign for my parents to go like, oh, maybe this kid could, you know, try
yeah.
it out. So that was where I kind of started my fashion journey.
And so what were the things you were doing there? What was the kind of, can you remember like the
for
first,
A-levels?
No, for when you went on to the to college to study fashion.
College what was, the kind was of stuff? Great. Like there was, but I did my foundation course, BA and masters, all of it in London College of Fashion. But just to kind of understand like what's going on in the town, like where do you hang out, go clubbing as well, see the people, like get the vibe of what's in what I guess so-called trends, and to kind of feel that on your skin. Was really nice. And then for college wise, obviously you just learn how to sew, do the pattern cutting, how to do expressive ideas. So it was a really, really stretching period for me.
Yeah. And do you think you could have got a similar education at that time in Japan, or was that something you felt
looking back at my life, I think I'm very happy that I had an experience in London back in that time. And I think London fashion is always something that triggers lots of inspiration for the world as well. And I was able to actually do lots of work experiences with designers, PR offices, boutiques. Trying to see, like joining like Sugar Babes music video as an intern, you know?
There was
like, lots of different elements that I was able to kind of grab onto. So it was really inspirational. Also finding how the industry works while you're a student was a very, very good experience.
So when was this? Like 90s or later than that?
So it's like 2000s, like right? When Kylie was going na na na.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
That was when my college started.
I see, okay. Yeah. That's the marking point for that. Yeah. All right, so you were working in fashion and music then, or kind of getting kind of jobs or getting interested in that crossover point?
Yeah,
as well?
Like, well, actually, my cousins is an opera singer.
Oh, right.
So I was interested in singing as well when I was getting like free singing lessons at the Royal Academy of Music.
Oh, really?
But there was a point that my teacher over there is like, are you going to do fashion? Are you going to do classic? And I'm like, I'm going to do fashion. So So predominantly, it's always been in the fashion and creative world.
And did you have any sort of Japanese influence? I guess, you know, you would have inevitably had some kind of Japanese influence in the stuff that you were kind of interested in and producing.
Definitely. I think because of the dual nationality and the double background that I've had, I think it's always the kind of process that I have within the creativity is kind of mixing two things as well. And I think that comes from my background.
And was that, I mean, how would that come across in fashion? Would there be a sort of, I don't know, traditional Japanese element to the things that you were
like, putting together? For example, after I graduated, I actually had my own brand. I had it with my ex at the time. Mm. But the concept was to see Japanese culture from a Western point of view.
So that was
the whole brand essence. So like if otaku culture was actually transported into Western culture, and that was like 10, 15 years ago, which was a little bit, you know, now it could be a normal thing, but I think back then that was a little bit more of a challenging kind of concept. So yeah, I think the whole idea of this mixed culture has always been part of it.
Because it seems to me that London has always been, you know, like you said, it's been kind of a leader in many ways, but Japan has always been kind of a really important part of that, or it seems to be, right? Even now, kind of going back to London, there's still, that feels like a kind of really important element. Maybe other parts of this part of the world maybe a kind of maybe a little bit more prominent now, like sort of Korea and stuff perhaps. But Japan has always been really important, isn't it?
Yeah, because I think the way Japanese people approach design and the Western culture approaches design is so different. Like I feel like when I was in college, for example, yes, the final garment was important, but at the same time, the process of how you got to the final garment was also very important.
Yeah.
And I feel like in Japan, sometimes it's what the end result is.
Yeah, okay.
So there's a concept and there's an end and there's not much maybe journey. So
right.
I think that could be like a really big difference in how, you know, you see it. And I think when I came back to Japan and I started seeing other fashion students' portfolios and stuff like that, I definitely felt there's that different way of approaching.
Right. And is it true? I mean, I always think, certainly with music, that the thing that I first really got to kind of realize the differences between kind of British music and Japanese music was the detail that's put into Japanese music seemed to be a lot more, you know, whereas British music always seems to have that kind of DIY punk kind of element to it. Is that the same in fashion as well, do you think?
I don't know. I think it could be more complicated in a way with the Japanese. I think when it comes to the skills, I think Japanese people are so much more proud with their skill sets as well. So when it goes into it, it gets really, really, really deep.
Right.
So I feel like maybe the Western's got like a little bit more of atmospheric kind of thing.
Yeah.
But when it comes to Japanese fashion, I think it's the small details and where the material comes from.
Yeah, sure.
All this kind of like traditional things is always something that puts twists to the
garments
and the collections.
Yeah, very interesting. So at that point, so when you're kind of, when you left college to kind of go into work, what were the kind of jobs you were doing?
I always wanted to go into the big fashion houses.
Yeah.
That was my dream. Balenciaga was my dream. But the first opportunity that I got was actually at Puma. So I am at Puma now. But
yeah.
Before then, my first job was in Puma. So there was this a section called Black Station within Puma that was just doing the fashion collaboration.
Ah, right.
And back then in the time, I think now if you speak about sports fashion, it seems to be everywhere.
Mm.
But 10, 15, 20 years ago, it was Y3, Yoji and Adidas, Stella and Adidas. And then there was McQueen, Puma.
Right.
So I was fortunate enough to be able to design the Alexander McQueen and Puma line when I was about 26 something.
Okay.
So that was a crazy.
How did you manage to get into that area?
Well, you know what? Like, my life is always about mistakes. And I always fall into it. And I work hard for it. But
yeah.
It's all about grabbing the opportunity. Actually, my best friend from college started working at Puma.
Yeah.
Ages ago. And then her schedule was crazy. And she couldn't take holiday for quite a long time. So she called me one day saying, I need a break. So do you reckon you can cover me for a couple of weeks? And that's basically how my career started.
Nice.
And then I got on with the creative director and he offered me a position to actually start working there.
Yeah,
and then
yeah.
about like a year later, the whole apparel Alexander McQueen Puma started.
Yeah, okay.
So that's kind of where I kind of managed to grab the opportunity and move forward.
That's brilliant. What was it like to try and, because like you said, those kind of collaborations were quite sort of new at that time, weren't they? So how did you approach that? Because it's quite an innovative area to be working in.
Definitely. It was really interesting to be in the middle of it, if that makes sense. Because there's what Puma wants and there's what McQueen wants. So trying to kind of blend those two elements. And I think going back to your earlier question as well, like having this kind of dual background, that it's always about mixing two things. And I think that's where my kind of skill set came kind of good in that moment. So it's like trying out new things, conveying lots of different ideas. And there's like, mistakes and success and everything else, but you just learn and try and hope for the better.
And how open were both the companies to, you know, to
those
mistakes and
I mean, you have to try to see how it goes, and then depending on what we create in the marketing team and everything else, then starts to kind of go from there as well. So it was definitely a interesting and good learning point.
And how did you move forward after that? What was the kind of next
After Puma, I kind of earlier on, as I just mentioned, I had my own brand. I also worked as a freelance creative director for another Chinese sportswear brand called Li-Ning, which is a really big sportswear brand as well. So I was traveling to Beijing quite a lot. And so, I was doing both my brand and consultancy work.
Yeah.
Doing my own brand was interesting.
What was the story behind that?
Back then, my partner was an illustrator, and I was more in a pattern cutting side. So it was just like mixing again two elements to it. And we wanted to kind of create a collection that the illustration, the patterns of the garment itself became the garment's pattern. So it was kind of quite a complex kind of thing. I did about 3 seasons, managed to get into Harrods for menswear. It was like lots of things kind of like slowly happening, but we broke up.
Okay, right, I see. And the company broke up.
So we were like, there's no point, is there? So
right.
Yeah.
So you both kind of needed that partnership for it to kind of be what
we were
it was.
Kind of promoting both each other to do this brand.
People listening to this might be interested in things like when you sort of said, we got into Harrods. I mean, how do you kind of begin to have, is it a conversation? You kind of get in touch with somebody there, like a buyer of, is that how it works?
So like, I mean, it really helped me that I was in lots of internships, like working for lots of different brands. So during my student period of time, I was standing in the booth at London Fashion Week, representing the brands that I was working. So I had already had these connections with buyers and PR people. So I was doing all that rounds. Then finally, you're going to have to go around those people saying, I'm doing my own brand, like with you, you know, then start your own show, presentation during that period of time. And yeah, trying to convince them and relentless attacks.
Is it? That's just what it is. It's like a numbers game, right? It just
keeps on. It was just like, who do I know? Who can I contact? Yeah. How can I sell it in?
What
can I do for you specially?
Right. And then Harrods, after a while, they were like,
So for the menswear t-shirts, they got in there. So it was really nice.
That's brilliant. Yeah. And if when you do that, does that then, I mean, I know that obviously the brand didn't continue, but if it did, do you think that would have been, you know, you use that then to get into other places?
Yeah, like, so, I mean, also the way of, I mean, again, going back to this whole dual nationality, but I was able to play with the London side and the Tokyo side as well. So something good happened in London, I could bring it back to Tokyo.
Sure.
So there was a shop called Candy in Shibuya, which is a cool, it's not there anymore, but it was a pretty cool shop. And we had a little pop-up there and then used that information to go back to London. So it was kind of like a catapulting those two things.
Yeah, right. Okay. So you're constantly building in two different places. So that after that, so you moved back to Japan, is that right? Or was there something else in between that? There's probably lots of things.
I actually moved to Cebu.
To where?
Philippines.
Oh, okay, right.
So, you know, the friend that I just mentioned who needed a holiday, she was actually from she lived in Cebu.
Yeah, yeah.
So I went to Cebu and I was there for like a year.
Okay.
Kind of chilling.
Just enjoying
like learning how to dive.
Nice. Okay, brilliant.
That was nice.
Yeah.
Actually, while I was in Cebu, there was a big typhoon that hit Cebu about 10, 15 years ago. So my friend's family was actually the center for the charity organization to like help all the people that was affected by the hurricane.
Mm.
So that was my first time to kind of go into a little bit of a charitable activist kind of idea, which in the past I used to be like this, like fashion, I don't care, everything's perfect. You know, like I was slightly soulless, I guess. But yeah, that was the first time that kind of started to learn that giving back is also very, very important in life.
Right. Okay. Yeah. And then, so then you moved to Japan.
Then
after
I moved
that,
to Japan. Yeah.
Right. And how had it changed in the time that I guess you may have been kind of still connected and going back and forth?
Yeah, I've been going back and forth through doing my own brand as well. I had a little bit of network over here as well, so I thought that was going to be easy, but it wasn't easy at the beginning.
Okay.
Yeah, it was quite hard to find jobs and trying to get myself back onto, you know, working.
Sure. Yeah.
But I had a friend of mine who had a music label. And so they were looking for someone to style their artists. So one day I just had a call saying, like, we got a video we need to shoot in about a week and we haven't got any outfits ready.
Right. Okay, 1 week.
Yeah, so it's like, you're going to do it? And I'm like, well, okay then. So I did it and it was really good fun. It was absolutely amazing. And then he's like, well, why don't come and work for me for a bit? So, yeah, I was kind of looking after artists and graphics, styling, arranging shoots. So that's kind of first time that, like, the fashion kind of moved into a slightly different category. But I felt like when you create a collection or when you're designing, you're always telling a story of what you want to kind of portray. So the skill set of actually telling a story, I realized that could be actually put into different creative disciplines.
Yeah,
so that was my first experience of actually expanding and stretching
kind
of background.
And did you then kind of, was that something you kept doing as a freelancer, or did you?
I did that for about a year.
Okay.
It was definitely interesting trying to put the looks together. Then, because I was arranging shoots and stuff like that, I had another friend of mine just saying, like, hey, should we make a video together? And do you know Show Studio? Like, there's a guy called Nick Knight who's an amazing photographer, but he has this website called Show Studio.
Okay.
And there was a fashion movie award. And I think 5-7 years ago is when fashion really started going to more moving images rather than just still shots.
Right.
So that's the first time that's literally like rang up all the creatives I know, like even the Ami Aya-chan, the really quite influential Japanese girls. Well, then they joined this crazy shoot. I think we had about like 40 people in one day doing like four stories, like
wow,
from 7 in the morning till like midnight.
Wow, that's full on. Amazing.
Yeah, so that's kind of when I decided that I want to become like a creative producer.
Yeah.
For moving images.
I see. Okay. Mm. So you did that for a while and then back at Puma, like soon after that?
I actually did like more music videos.
Oh, you did? Okay.
Yeah. For, there's a people called 88 Rising.
Yeah.
So I did like Rich Brian's music video, all that kind of thing, which was crazy because like the next day it was like already a million views.
And wow.
I was like, wow. That's and then amazing. I had a call from Google. Well, it wasn't a call from Google, but we pitched into Google.
Yeah.
And we did like a special 5 videos for the top YouTubers back then. I think it was 2016.
Okay, right.
So for YouTube Fan Fest, and that was quite experience, yeah.
So quite early days of YouTubers and things, wasn't
still,
it, I guess?
Still, I think in Japan it was still really like at the early time, yeah.
Yeah, sure. Mm. And were there any special... I don't know, kind of requirements that you kind of needed for that?
For Google?
Medium. Yeah.
I mean, it was really interesting because I had to spend time with the 5 different YouTubers.
Right.
And to see what they wanted, what they were comfortable with.
Yeah.
And to come up with it. And I think I only had like 6 weeks to do 5 videos. So it did kill me.
Yeah.
But I learned a lot and it was fun.
Brilliant. Mm. Okay. Amazing. Wow, there's so many highlights leading up to, you know, my question was basically what are some of the highlights in between your kind of Puma career? But actually, yeah, these are all kind of amazing things, but I'm assuming they all fed into what you're currently doing.
Yes, definitely.
You know, so back at the same company, but at a very different time, you know, things have changed a lot. Digital is so much more important, isn't it? And so what is your role now at Puma?
So
Puma
at the moment, I'm Puma Japan head of creative and design.
Yeah.
So whatever products that come through Japan, it kind of goes through me. So I oversee all those directions.
Right, okay. Yeah. So is there a central design hub?
Yes.
And is that, where is that?
So in Puma, there's a main design offices is based in Herzog in Germany, Nuremberg. Mm. And another one is in Boston in the States.
Right.
And there's a few other small regional creation center.
Okay.
So that's like when the market is quite important to our company.
Yeah.
So Japan is one of them. So, yeah.
Right. Okay. So you sort of oversee what kind of design to make it to Japan. Mm-hmm. And also, do you get involved in designs for Japan only? Is there such a thing?
Predominantly, it's Japan only. But there's certain projects that I also oversee like APAC regions as well. So Australia. Sometimes I help out or we work closely together with the China team.
Right.
Or there's certain project I'm doing with the Korean team.
Yeah.
So depending on what's actually happening with collabs and local launches, depending on what product it is.
Interesting. And I guess you like it.
Oh, it's crazy. It's busy.
It must be busy. Yeah.
Sometimes my head is like, I have like 12 collections going on at the same time.
And dreaming of trainers and sneakers.
Yeah. But I think I have to say, until I got Puma, there was, as you said, there was lots of highlights, but there was lots of down and mistakes and all that kind of thing. So being able to kind of feel like it might be going the wrong way or that gut feeling to kind of trying to gear it to the other side
has
definitely been taught to me from the earlier stage in my life, I think.
I understand, yeah. Mm. It feels to me, you know, you're very honest with all the answers, and it's really refreshing, you know, to kind of be able to talk about this stuff. But one thing that I think a lot of people struggle with, and something that I've struggled with as well, is that thing that when you are out on your own and kind of doing business and you're kind of doing your own thing, and you might be making mistakes. Sometimes you're not making any money, but you know, and then you could switch to a full-time job, you know, which you might love. But are there elements of that freedom do you miss, or do you think it's possible with the sort of job you have and jobs that are out there where you can? You can tick every box. You kind of feel
I'm definitely fortunate with the positions I have now. Mm. And I think the environment is absolutely amazing. And there's definitely, creatively, having this kind of like full-time job in a way gives you that peace of mind.
Sure.
So I don't have to worry about the company's like finances or is it going to be shipped at the same time?
Or
do I have the right lenses?
Yeah.
You know, that's kind of gone out the window in the last few years since I've been back at Puma. So I'm fortunate enough to just literally concentrate on the concept. What's the end target? What is the purpose for this? And is that the right purpose? I could ponder that on myself and with the team and have feedbacks with other sectors or professionals within the industry.
yeah.
and have that bouncing back. Because I think the most important thing and most hard thing when you're working for yourself or by yourself is sometimes you can't go, hey, what do you think about this? You know, so sometimes what you're thinking is stupid and sometimes it's amazing. And sometimes you don't really know how good of the idea that was until you bounce it back with someone.
That's true, isn't it?
And I definitely am a believer on individuality is important, but also having the team that you're on the same page so you can actually grow the idea and how do you nest to it stronger. So that's kind of environment I have at Puma at the moment. So definitely blessed.
It's an award-winning company, isn't it, as well, for like one of the best companies to work for.
It's really nice. Everyone's nice.
That's really great. That's fantastic. What about the kind of ecosystem around it with Puma? I guess, you know, there's so much that can be done within the company, but like, you know, I guess you still have connections with the wider creative communities as well, right? So music and all kinds of aspects. Do you find that, you know, because of your network as well, that it's really helped you?
I mean, there's sometimes when we had like the launch parties, you know, just before COVID time. I was able to call up my friends, come and DJ, and like that matches the product that we're going to put out as well. So yeah, there's lots of ins and outs and definitely trying to stay young at heart, even though I'm slightly getting older.
Well, I think that's the same with everyone. It's fine. So outside of Puma, I mean, you do a lot of things. I mean, you're very active here in Japan with different campaigns and different ideas. So can you tell me about some of the things you're involved in?
There's one thing that started back in 2018 called Mr. Gay Japan, which is, gay beauty pageant in a way. And this is, again, really random. So when I was actually doing quite a lot of different shoots, one of my friends actually runs a beauty pageant called Miss Grand Japan, which is one of the top three beauty pageants.
Right.
And I needed to do some shoots and I needed like about 20 girls. So I rang him up saying like, hey, like, can I use the girls? We can do shoots. And while we were moving around in a taxi from one like shoot A, shoot B, shoot C, I was just talking to her saying like, there's no gay competitions here. Because when I moved to England, I saw, you know, Mr. Gay UK.
Right, yeah.
Because I go, oh God, there's nothing here. So you should do it, you know? And then she went on researching mode. And she found out there's this thing called Mr. Gay World that existed. And she was like, why don't we do it? And I was like, really? Am I going to do this?
Got to actually do it now you said it,
And then, but then suddenly I started getting more messages from like Asian, other countries that was running Mr. Gay Thailand, Mr. Gay, you know, something else. And they started messaging me saying, you know, these things could make a difference.
Right.
And then like what I said earlier about this, maybe this charitable heart I learned in Cebu and all that kind of thing kind of came back. So yeah, so me, my husband and Eriko is the lady from Miss Grand Japan. So we decided to start this thing up.
Right, okay.
Yeah, so we did that in 2018. I think we got three or four Mr. Gay Japans now. Well, the first guy is called Shogo, and he is absolutely amazing. He's got more than 10,000 followers on YouTube now.
Right.
He's definitely working to get this HIV idea into the world, and he's got his YouTube channel is all about sexual health as well. So I'm very happy that we were able to create some sort of platform for gay people in Japan to actually start telling their stories. To make them a little bit feel like, okay, you know, let's face this. I think for Mr. Gay Japan, the biggest achievement that we had was 2 years ago, we did a online petition for marriage equality, which we successfully collected about 27,000 signatures.
Did you really? Wow.
Which is quite crazy.
That's a lot. Yeah, amazing.
And again, like, I didn't know what to do with it.
What do I do with this?
So we had to find out a way to kind of hand it into the Ministry of Justice. So we did quite a lot of researching, calling up politicians.
Wow.
How do I do this? But we ended up actually going to the Ministry of Justice.
And you just handed it over?
Yeah, we had like an hour and a half kind of discussion point.
Oh, really?
And then we handed on the all the signatures and we made a little bit of press out of it. So
sure.
I'm very proud of that. Yeah.
That's fantastic. And this is also connected to the sort of things you want to do more of with radio. Is that right?
Yes.
So tell me about this, because by telling me, you're telling lots of other people as well.
So at the end of it, I just kind of started to feel like everything is about love. And I think if the whole world appreciates the idea of love a little bit more, it might be better. And I think I want to create that some sort of safe space that you can talk about. Mm-hmm. How easy is it to do what you love, or how hard is it to do what you love? And I think it's about falling in love and getting heartbroken, and is it toxic, is it not toxic? But I think if I could talk the way I'm talking, and if people who come on my show could talk that way, I'm kind of hoping that maybe there's a little bit more conversations about different kind of feelings and actually understanding each other rather than like punching each other.
Yeah, absolutely. We definitely need more of that.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah. And do you think that's more needed in Japan, or is it because you're here in Japan? What do you think?
I'm definitely one of those people that would like to utilize where I am and what I have as well. But I think it's nice to be able to have that conversation in Japan. Mm. And I think it'd be nice to, if the talk could go to the more younger generation, to kind of start to feel like, okay, like I might not fit in the box, but it seems like there's other people doing it.
Yeah,
and they're
yeah.
telling us it's okay to do it.
Yeah.
And I think maybe Japan could be a little bit more open world. You can talk about problems and you can also accept problems, and maybe you could love each other a little bit more.
And do you feel, you know, for example, I'm just trying to think of a really good example, but for example, it's slightly different, but, you know, a racing driver, Formula One driver like Lewis Hamilton, who's, you know, who's managed to kind of work within his racing team to help promote, you know, younger black drivers into it, and, you know, into Formula One, for example. And then I think there's another Formula One driver, actually. I only know Formula One. I don't really know much about any other sports. But Sebastian Vettel has been talking about equality and rights, you know, across the board. And so do you feel that this is kind of like something that companies now are kind of actively trying to find ways to, you know, to kind of, to be part of the positive society
change. And I think big companies got power.
Sure.
So I think when they start putting those messages out in the right way, when it's not just money making, you have to make money because it's business.
Sure.
You know, but I think the whole gesture and movement could start from those places. Even Lewis Hamilton is a Puma guy, actually.
That's right, isn't it?
Yeah. And he had a rainbow flag on his helmet and everything else. I'm like, wow, that's absolutely amazing. It makes me feel like you want to love him more.
Yeah, absolutely. It's not, he's the best driver in the world, but he's also like brilliant.
It's nice
person.
That those, and I think another problem maybe in Japan is those famous people or influential people could actually start doing something more, and I think that's another thing that could be lacking in Japan.
So maybe your radio show could be, you know, I'm already talking about this is going to happen, because I feel that it's kind of,
fingers crossed.
Yeah, right. It's definitely needed. But it's like, you know, what that does, it gives you a platform then to invite people to come on and to talk. And then that is a very powerful thing, isn't it? So if you've got a good sports person.
And I don't want to be denying whoever that comes to. You know, I think everyone is allowed to have their point of view. But I think if you both could actually ponder upon those things and come up with your own answers, I think that's important. Yeah.
Absolutely. What are the you do a lot of different things and you're involved in many things, but what's the main driver, do you think, behind you as a individual in all this area?
I think I always like something new.
Right.
Yeah, something new and challenging, and I think every time I just push myself forward in it gives me so much energy. Sometimes if I'm at home for like 3-4 days and not talking to anyone, I get so quiet and I got no energy. But if I force myself to just go for a drink or something, I'm like, for 3 days, I'm like, so I think the idea of the excitement to feel like you're alive, I definitely feed off of people as well. So
that's brilliant. And how do you feel, the, you know, someone who's spent a lot of time in the UK back in Japan again, do you feel like the energy of Tokyo is kind of a good positive thing?
It's an interesting one.
Yeah, there's a controversial question bit.
I think for example, in England, I think the connection could be made like straight away sometime when the spark is there. The spark is there. Something that I learned in Japan is it could take a little bit long time. But I think once you have that connection in Japan, like, you know, they're there for you as well. So it's just a different pace of actually getting closer. And I think that's got to do with the way you speak the language. the way you call their names, you know, all that kind of thing. I feel like it kind of goes in. But I also feel like in Japanese, we don't really use that word love as much. We use the word suki, which is I like. Mm. And I think the difference between suki and ai, which is like love and like, it's a similar thing, but the intensity is slightly different.
Yeah.
So I think that's just all about how comfortable you are to accept or open your heart. So I think that's a big difference, maybe.
That's really well put, actually, because I was always wondering why you saw, you know, the T-shirts in the 80s, 70s and 80s, I love New York.
Yeah.
And even London emulated that as well.
Yeah.
But I've never seen Tokyo
not much, huh?
adopt that. Yeah,
not much.
People talk about Tokyo as a city that's convenient, but even people I know who love the city, they never say it's a city they love. But I mean, I think it's fantastic, but I'm kind of a new arrival, relatively, you know, so I'm still buzzing off the energy of it all. Yeah. But it's, interesting, interesting. So future plans, what are you hoping to do in the future? I mean, where would you like to see? So the radio show is one thing.
Radio show is one thing. Looking into actually doing a little bit more art projects as well for myself. I've got this like crazy dream that when I'm about 65, I could have like a retrospective of George Ichikawa in some amazing museum.
Yeah.
So I don't know how I'm going to
see that.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's going to happen.
I can't figure it out still, but like, I feel like I've always got these like lots of ideas, and currently I feel like my ideas are now kind of getting closer to three different roads, you know, like, so it's kind of starting to kind of intersect. How do I do that from now on, I think, is going to be the key point. But yeah, like, if I could be creative, share love and show something beautiful that I can actually share with people, I think that's what I want to do. So
And I guess today there are so many ways that you can do that, because you know, again, through we talked about digital earlier, but you know, the kind of idea that, like, for example, this radio program, which is a kind of hybrid radio program that's going out as video as well. Yeah, there's so many different ways. Yeah, here we are. There's so many different ways of kind of getting messages across, isn't there? But there's also a lot of people doing that.
Yes.
So that's, I think, probably the biggest challenge is probably, like, how do you get your head above everyone else's, right?
Definitely. And I think that's why I thought, like, one of the best things that I can do is talk.
Yeah.
I do like talking.
Yeah, yeah.
So I thought maybe doing the radio or podcast or something like this could be a platform. Then from there, I might be able to actually branch off to other places as well.
Yeah. It's interesting, isn't it? Those very basic fundamental things like people just talking is still really important.
Mm.
And I wondered how, I don't know how hooked up you are with the whole metaverse thing. Is that
a little bit. I definitely love the idea.
Yeah. I mean, do you see your kind of ideas moving in that space as
I was actually involved in this NFT project called Pixel Skull. So I got a friend of mine in New York who just started doing this. So his idea was to kind of almost like One Piece manga to have like lots of these like teammates and actually like promote it at the same time. And he was crazy. He made this like digital museum as well. So I was involved in that. I got a friend of mine who is actually doing an NFT project and doing really well. So hopefully on the radio show, I can invite her and start talking us about what the NFT world in Japan is.
Yeah,
which
is
slightly, again, a little bit different to the world that I feel like. So I went to, you know, Trunk Hotel in Shibuya? Like about 5-6 months ago, there was like an NFT event. And I used to go to Trunk all the time, but the audience is so different. But they were so chatty, they were so happy. And I'm like, wow, and everyone was so young.
I feel
like such a new vibe that I just need to kind of understand how it goes.
So, right.
Yeah, that's definitely another interesting element.
So why do you think NFTs in Japan are different to... I think there is something, but I can't figure it out.
I still can't figure it out, and I'm hoping that I can talk to her on the show.
Yeah,
and actually
can
figure these things out, because I think the possibility of how you use things is different as well. So.
Yeah, that's right, isn't it? And also, there was a headline on, I can't remember, it's maybe Time magazine or something, talking about the metaverse, that a lot of people in the UK, Europe and the US, maybe they're getting a little bit tired of it, but in Japan there seems to be a real hunger for
But I think sometimes those trends in Japan come 6 months to 1 year later.
Yeah.
So maybe it's that kind of reverse. And I think the NFT did drop quite a lot. So how does it go? But I think the idea of NFT, I think I have a feeling that it's going to evolve, that goes outside just from the art world. And I think it will start to become a little bit more of a normal everyday life. Mm. And I feel like it's similar to the internet, how when internet started back in the 90s, everyone's like, yeah, whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
But before you know it, like now we can't live without it.
That's so true, isn't it?
I feel like how do you actually prove that you own something digitally is going to be so important. Mm. Especially, I went to Berlin a few months ago. And I was speaking to my friend's kid. She's using a headphone that's $30. But in her Roblox game, it costs $300.
Really?
So for her, she's about 9 years old, her avatar's headphone is so much more important.
Wow.
Than the real headphones that she uses.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So there's definitely this kind of idea clip.
That's interesting.
But when I was... If I look at myself back, when I was 16, for example, when I was struggling with my sexuality, do I come out, do I not come out? And if I did have that safe space on the metaverse when I was 16,
yeah,
where would I be?
Yeah, yeah,
I think I would be in the metaverse.
Yeah,
being
sure.
Being this openly gay, queer person.
Yeah, right. That makes sense.
So, yeah, I feel like when the younger generation who is growing up with this technology grows up and that becomes the standard.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I mean, I can't even imagine it, but it'd be nice to be able to kind of have that conversation as well.
So in Japan, yeah, I can understand. Maybe that's why it's quite interesting for people here, because maybe there isn't quite that sort of freedom that there is, you know, in Europe, in the UK, in the US, for example.
The outlet, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. Well, we're pretty much out of time, but...
Well.
Yeah, how would... if people wanted to get hold of you, social media the best way to kind of...
Yeah, I guess Instagram is possibly best of me.
What's your Instagram?
It's Georgie_Ichi, so it's GEORGIE_ICHI. If there's anything, say hi.
Sounds good. All right. Brilliant.
Cool.
Well, thanks for coming in.
Thank you very much.
We'll listen out for your radio show, because I'm sure it's going to be happening at some point very soon. And thanks for coming in. Yeah,
thanks very much. Thank you for having me.
Thank
you. Bye.
Bye.